the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
What is that looking like? I mean, are there a lot of people there that are on ventilators?
You know, I don't work in the main ICU. We just do recovery where I'm at. So, you know.
Well, don't you have to put somebody under anesthesia to incubate them?
Intubate, yes. Yes, they do. They sedate people to do that. Just because, well, obviously none of us wants anything in our mouth like that.
And that stays in there the entire time? It's a tube or a hose or?
Yes, it's a little tube called the endotracheal tube. It has a little balloon on it that holds the tube in place, and then it's hooked up to a machine to that's set for that specific person of how many respirations and how deep the respirations are, and keeps you alive. And then of course we sedate people. You know, we don't want anybody to be awake while that's on if they're fighting with it. Or
so are you like in a semi-induced coma?
No, it's more sedation, like anesthesia.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, as soon as they turn the sedation off, then of course the people wake up.
Oh, wow. And,
yeah, because obviously we want them to wake up at some point, you know.
How are you, how are they feeding them? Intravenously or through a feeding tube?
There's all different ways, depends on how long you've been on a ventilator. You know, they do what they call TPN, total parenteral nutrition, which is everything a person would need to live while they can't eat. Sometimes they put in what they call.
So do they liquefy steak and potatoes? Because I would need that.
Yes, yes. Sometimes we call it a banana bag. If it has vitamin B's in it, it turns it a yellow color.
Wow. So
we give them vitamins and nutrition that way. Sometimes we put a little tube in their abdomen called a G-tube. Hmm. And that allows you to put baby formula into the stomach to help the person. You know,
and then you also have a catheter in there so that you can urinate and a bag so that you can poop, right?
That's what all the tubes are about, exactly.
The pooping happens naturally on its own, and we just clean that up.
It's more than I can even fathom. I was in the hospital one time, I've only been in the hospital, thank God, one time. And I had this little button with the Demerol.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I was like, good Lord, I'm glad y'all don't sell that over the counter, because I was like, beep.
Every 10 minutes. You can push that button as many times as you want, but it only gives you medicine every 10 minutes.
Oh.
So they tricked you.
Wow.
You were still limited. It's called a PCA, patient controlled analgesia.
Well, we've just been chatting it up, and we have not welcomed our guest properly. This is Teresa Walding, and we have Lynn McCready. How do you pronounce it? McCready?
McWright.
McWright. Okay. I was McWrong. I'm so glad to have you ladies here with me. This conversation is going to blow your mind, Brains, literally, here on the Edge, the place where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. These ladies are nurses. And before we get started, I want to thank you and love on you unbelievably because of the work that you do. This is, I mean, you know, to me, a nurse is better than a doctor because you're sitting there side by side with the patient. You are administering the medication. You're taking the verbal abuse. I had one nurse tell me that her patient bit her. You are dedicated nonstop. You are subjecting yourself to all kinds of you know, viruses, and, you know, you cleaning up, like you said, people's incontinence and putting in tubes and blood squirting all over the place. I mean, I just cannot tell you how much I appreciate you. There's not a time that I go to the doctor's office that I do not thank my nurse, even the one that takes the blood pressure, and the doctor for what you do. Now, Teresa, you are an anesthesiologist nurse. I'll get to that in just a minute. You'll give me the formal term. Okay. And Lynn, what type of nurse are you, baby?
Well, I'm a nurse practitioner, but I own a school for continuing education to help people become nurse coaches.
So now a nurse practitioner is one level below an actual quote unquote physician doctor.
That's right. That's right. My special area is health promotion. So I've always been involved in public health, and I'm most interested in bringing resilience to every person on the planet through the profession of nursing.
Well, you two have collaborated and come up with this great coaching program and business model to help nurses, and I think physicians too, or nurse practitioners, kind of get through this and with some sort of normalcy and retain their psyche and stop this anti-bullying. Lynn, tell me a little bit more about the program and the work that you do.
We've actually opened our program 4.5 years ago. So we were on the leading edge even then by virtue of the fact that we were online and have a continuing education program that actually opened on 3 continents. When we opened our doors. So the issues of nursing and healthcare are the same worldwide, even before the pandemic. And what we know is that the most important part of health is actually finding our own resilience. And certainly now that applies directly to the healthcare provider themselves, and then in turn to their clients and patients.
It takes so much to be a healthcare provider, a nurse, you know, and I'm just focusing on nursing right now. Again, the schooling, how long does it take to become a nurse?
Well, there are a couple of different programs that a basic nursing program can provide. A 2-year program or a 4-year program is usually the way that it goes. Most community colleges have a 2-year nursing program. And most universities have a 4-year nursing program. So right now that we have 4 million nurses in the United States, 3.8 million nurses in the United States. And we're really in a crisis situation right now, especially because the recent studies have shown that 67% of nurses are considering other careers right now.
You think?
And that the recent survey in our state of Texas showed that new nurses graduating stayed in the profession on an average of 18 months.
Wow.
And the average age of a nurse today is 55.
Wow. You know, I go to the facility here, my healthcare provider, I noticed there are tons of nurses that are here from other countries.
Yes. Teresa knows about that.
Right.
She's at one hospital that specializes in bringing in nurses.
Right. And they're from the Philippines. From what I heard, I don't know, their training is not like the 4 years. They can get through a program a little bit more accelerated, but we accept their credentials here in the United States. I don't know if that's
We do. And the wait to come to the United States as a nurse is almost as long as the wait to get into nursing school. So whatever is going to be happening 3 years from now is starting today, but it's not the answer to our current situation.
Our current situation, again, is, as the word has been worn out, unprecedented. Okay, so
yeah, we've had cracks in the system before, but now we can see exactly where they are.
And also, I noticed that there is a company here in San Diego called Nurse Providers, where they have nurses on a 13-week rotation. you know,
Yeah, Grief has worked with some of those
yeah,
also.
that's a travel agent, travel company where they put nurses on assignment for 13 weeks at a time, and they can go nationwide. If they don't just do them locally, it can be anywhere. And there's lots of travel companies out there.
Wow. So, Teresa, tell us a little bit about the incredible work that you do as an anesthesiologist nurse, which I think is very fascinating because someone was telling me that, you know, again, to be an anesthesiologist is like being a doctor. You're taking somebody under, you know, and you're keeping them under and you're checking their blood pressure. At first, I was really, really nervous when I went into the hospital and I had my surgery. I was like, nope. But then I was out like that, and I was
Oh, you're
back
done.
up,
Yeah.
boom. And I was like, I told her, no, you know, please watch. Are you going to be careful? She said, I got you. I got you. So my life is literally not in the doctor's hands, but in your hands. Tell me about
I'm
the.
actually a post-anesthesia recovery nurse, so
Okay.
I don't put people to sleep. I wake them up.
Oh.
So when they come out of the operating room, they come to me. So I'm the one that holds your chin, make sure you're breathing, see, you know, what I can do about your pain, and watch for a smooth transition from being under anesthesia to becoming fully awake. So,
Being under anesthesia does a lot to you too. You know, my hair was
yeah.
kind of falling out afterwards, and my skin was all ruddy. And you know, again, your elimination was crazy. You got to drain that stuff out of your body.
Yeah.
What
Yeah. Well, it's actually a gas, and you have to breathe it off. There is a propofol is one of the agents that we use to put people to sleep with.
That's what Michael
That's an
Jackson
IV.
was using, huh?
Yes, and it's an IV medication, but it doesn't last very long. So as soon as you turn it off, people wake up. The same with the gases. You know, and of course, you always have to take into account the patient's health. There's a lot to be
Right. If they have underlying
aware
conditions, you know, but this
of.
propofol, I want to go back to that for a minute. He wasn't actually being put to sleep. I don't know what.
It puts you to sleep. It puts you in a sedated state.
Okay.
So it, and as long as the medication is running, you feel like you're asleep.
Wow.
But it's different because it's a chemical induced sleep. It's not your natural sleep rhythm.
Right, so you don't go into REM sleep and all of that.
There are a few people who will dream. So, you know, that's an individual response to the medications. So you have to just, that's one of the things we watch for, you know, how well you're tolerating the medicine and if you're waking up. But, you know, the main thing that I really do is coaching nurses. You know, I bring these principles of resilience to everything that I do. Lynn and I opened this school 4.5 years ago because we wanted to help nurses become more resilient. And a lot of this stress and disease and burnout and even incivility or bullying at work can all be helped with people understanding what the principles of resilience are.
Okay,
And
so that's what I want Lynn to do. Lynn,
yeah.
give me your definition of resilience in this paradox. Tell my brains, what are you really trying to help these nurses get through, work with, and hold on to?
It's a very interesting question because resilience is natural to all of us, but it's just been covered over by so many erroneous thoughts and concerns and anxiety and regrets. We're always going overtime on our brains working in regard to our personal thinking. But when we connect to the divine intelligence, that's where our true resilience resides, and our rest is in that same place. So resilience is best defined by what it's not, and it's not your willpower. It's not outside circumstances. It's not anything that is external to you. Your resilience actually is what you notice when you stop overworking your mind and allow your mind to rest. It's in that silence, it's in that still space where we find our center, where we have what we call our grounding, where we experience insight, where we experience epiphanies. And that resilience is always there, is natural to us, and is inborn in every person.
Okay, but you got to dig deep. And I'm talking about, you know, using a big old shovel to find this resilience. You are on call. Your mind is constantly reeling 24/7. You don't just have yourself to think about. You have your patient, the responsibility to the doctor, the hospital, the accountability, all of that. And then I'm hearing, which is so disheartening, and I'm so disappointed in some of you nurses that are doing this, an extra added stress of bullying and not getting along. Now, I've never had that problem. Every time I've, you know, my mother's been in the hospital or a family member's been in the hospital, the nurses have been frontline. I mean, I go back the next day to acknowledge them and they're off duty. But it's just constant. And you're working, what, like 12-hour shifts, 3 days a week?
Oh, no, 6 days a week now. Wow. Teresa, really, speak to what she's saying in regard to the nurse today on the floor.
So, you know, as most people know, or maybe they don't, nurses work under a great deal of stress. You know, we're taking care of very sick people. We have certain measures that we have to meet to follow the guidelines, such as best practice for taking care of people. And, you know, and in the mix of all of that, you have family members, staff members, all the different departments that we work with to get things done for the patient. You know, so it can be very stressful to keep all of those balls up in the air at the same time. And, you know, I never really thought about it too much being a nurse. You know, I've been a nurse for 25 years now, I think. And I thought that looked normal to just have to do all of these things and be a little bit stressed about it. And I think what happens is we lose our perspective of what's really going on, and it becomes a problem about the doctor or the patient family, or the pharmacy is calling you, or the phone is ringing, or you're getting a new patient, and it becomes about the tasks in a day where you may be feeling overwhelmed. What the principles of resilience did for me in all of that was brought me home. It brought me to the place of, it wasn't what was going on around me, it was my thoughts about it. Wow. And I didn't know that I was the one creating the thoughts and feelings about those things. When I saw that for the very first time, this huge weight just lifted off of me. It's like the problems I thought were problems weren't problems anymore, because I saw the way they got there. And that's what the principles of resilience are. They are principles that we use every single moment of every day that never change, that we don't know is really running the show. And it's our thought and our feelings about it. What that does for a person is really brings home to the fact that if you can see what's happening in the world or in your unit or with your patient, you bring yourself to each of those equations. And if you know where your experience is coming from, you can look at it in a way that is centered and grounded and is a calmness that wasn't there before. When you move from a place like that.
Right, but how do you ring that bell? I mean, you know, again, let's talk to the nurses that are, you know, crying on the television. It's breaking my heart.
Yeah. You know,
they just don't have the bandwidth. I mean, this is more.
Because they've lost their bearings.
Absolutely.
I've lost my bearings. I've lost mine where I thought, I can't take one more step. Or I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm not going to be able to handle it.
So Lynn, what do we do? Okay. And I understand identifying it. That's mm-hmm. the big key right there.
Yes.
Give me some tools. What are these nurses, what are you teaching them? What are you pouring into them to kind of find this resilience? Because again, I'm here with you and I'm looking for it and I don't see it.
They recognize that it's their thought. It's just a thought.
Give me an example. Give me an example when you say it's just.
I can't take another step. Of course you can. It's physically possible. It's the thought that's bringing the weight down on your shoulders. The thought that it's too much. Is it too much? No, it never has been too much. We've always only been given what we can do. But the only thing we can do is the very next thing that needs to be done. Resilience is that space before doing. It's that space, that open space, that is a free space where we can decide, do we want to go down the rabbit hole or do we want to take a breath of fresh air? That is a decision that we make every moment of our lives, always have, but we've not seen it before. There have always been people who have been resilient, and certainly kids are just such a beautiful example of this. I mean, they'll be having some kind of a spat and fighting with each other, and then all of a sudden you turn around and they're hugging each other.
Right.
They know that their inner wisdom is love and understanding, and they always go back to that. So your question is, how do you find your way home? Well, the same way we have always found our way home, through understanding that it's us that's making ourselves crazy. And all we need to do, I mean, I make it sound simple when I say this, is let go of all of those distracting thoughts. We had a colleague who worked with a group of physicians in a large medical center, and what the physicians found after their training was that when they let go of distracting thoughts, they were better able to find the answers to their patients' problems, which allowed them to leave work on time, which allowed them to have better work-life balance. And they loved the institution that they worked for. How is that possible in today's world? Because they simply identified the problem area, which is we finally isolated the one thing that's the problem, which is our personal thought.
Okay, so this is a lot of mindset work. I understand that. But how are they finding this? Is this through meditation? Is this through journaling? Is this through diet? Is this through exercise? Is this through getting a day off?
No, because all of that is trying to get someplace that you're not already. And the point, our point is resilience is natural. It resides inside all of us. It is always there. It has always been there, but we haven't noticed. We've been so caught up in our thinking that we haven't noticed that peace is what underlies all of the rest of it.
So now you're working with these incredible nurses right now, and you get two or three of them that are just about to join the program. What's the beginning? How do they start identifying this and finding their resilience? Can you tell me a little bit about that, Teresa?
Yeah, we start with some common language. So we are actually bringing some new language to be able to describe, because it's the description of the principles that does the work. It's how something works versus how that same something doesn't work. In this case, the thoughts that you think and where they're coming from. So we talk about such things as flat earth thinking, which is a description of how we think something has always worked, but now we know an accurate and true way to tell you how it works, which is thought in the moment. It has never been what we thought about something that created the truth. it was how it actually worked. So back way back when they thought the earth was flat, which is why we call this flat earth thinking, people thought that if you got to the edge of the earth, which is where as far as they could see, that they would actually fall off the earth. Well, as soon as that was proven untrue, the anchor business went out of business because they no longer needed huge anchors to hold them on to the edge of the earth.
Okay, that makes sense.
So we have a new way of looking at the way thought works from how we used to think about it, which was after thought already came to life. So that's why we have behavioral health. We have a diagnosis for mental illness based on behaviors of a person. What we're talking about is prior to the behavior, how it got there in the first place. And when you know that that's what created your life, you now see a way of interacting with your present in a completely different way. It turned my world on its ear because all of a sudden I knew.
I totally get it. I just can't get my head around a person or a nurse being able to take that time to pause, to find that resilience. Again, it's a mindset, it's a program, it's an ongoing process.
It's a noticing.
But you have so many outside influences that are constantly nagging at you that is changing your perception. That is, you know, I know it's the neuro-linguistic programming, it's the conversation that we're having in our head. You got so many things going on, you don't even have time to find your head.
But it actually works in the middle of an emergency, in the ICU, in the emergency room. You stop thinking about anything else other than exactly what to do next. And that's the calm in the storm.
What I heard you describing was like neuro-linguistic programming. This isn't that. I heard you describing like all of these things coming at you. It's not about that. Okay. It's this is a paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. And what that means is we are bringing to light the actual three things, principles, mind, thought, and consciousness that give every single human being on the planet their experience of life, because they use those principles for their personal thought. But it's the original mind, original consciousness, and original thought. It's a power. It doesn't care what you think. The what you think is you using your personal mind. So you can't hear what we're talking about through intellectually understanding it. It's getting a feel for the fact that your thought has now created what you see in your world. I don't know if that helps you. Oh, you're
We've
on mute.
Always seen stress as coming at us. And now what we're realizing is that life is actually lived from the inside out. We actually are in the driver's seat in regard to how we look at life. It's like instead of being a transmitter, we're now a receiver.
That makes sense. That makes perfect sense. So how is this this coaching and teaching being received by the medical community?
We're very fortunate that we began with an organization called the American Holistic Nurses Association, because they have always seen the most important part is taking care of the patient as a whole, body, mind, and spirit. But even beyond that, the more important thing is taking care of the nurse first. And how do you do that? Well, by taking care of the nurse, body, mind, and spirit.
Absolutely.
Beyond that, what we know is that everyone is looking for answers. All of the healthcare professions, all of the healthcare professionals, we've been invited to do a pre-conference workshop for the Texas Organization of Nursing Leadership at the end of February. And we'll have 715 hospitals at that virtual conference.
Wow, that is incredible. What do you say to the nurse right now that is, you know, giving up and experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder?
That's Teresa's special area.
That there's hope and you're not broken. You're not broken. You never were. And just being able to have the conversation like that with someone can help settle things down. You know, it's our thoughts and feelings about what's happening that create our reality. And we know there is a lot of trauma and, you know, feelings and emotions around, especially COVID right now. You know, having 5 or 6 patients code on you in one shift is a reality where it used to be just like an occasion, and it was never young, healthy people. I shouldn't say never, that's not true, but it wasn't like it is now, where there's something we can't see, something we can't touch, and yet it's hurting a lot of people. You know, when the pandemic came to my hospital, I suffered with my thinking a lot. It was the fear of the unknown. It was the fear of, what if I get this? What if my family gets it? My daughter works in the same day surgery reception area. She sees every single person that comes to the hospital for surgery, and then some family members and such. And I thought, what if she gets COVID? What will I do then? And I was like, well, you know, if I get it, that's fine, but not my daughter, not her, she's too young. And so I was really suffering with my thinking about something that hadn't even happened yet.
Right. And you know, that's something that I do share with people. A lot of times, and I fall victim to it as well, you go to the doctor, you have something wrong with you, and the first thing you think, oh my God, I'm gonna die. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, you know what? Work with fact-based information. Mm-hmm. Be in the here and now. Know what you know. And then as the information unfolds, then you deal with it. But don't predict misery or something that's going to happen, because it doesn't necessarily have to turn out that way. And if it is something that's devastating, there are options and there are choices. And if you allow yourself that space to be clear and to be open, you'll be more receptive to the options and the choices that you're going to receive. And I've talked to so many nurses on this show. Shout out to all my nurses. But I've noticed that once they've left the traditional westernized medicine, hospital, surgery, they really go into a more holistic, spiritual type of work. Integrative medicine, holistic healing, alternative medicines. They really go more to the spirit side. And I think, I don't know, a friend of mine was talking about she wanted to be a facilitator for hospice. And I didn't understand why she would want to do that. She said that that was the most peaceful and the most loving and caring type of work that she could do, helping someone make that transition. So I understand that these nurses have seen so much disease and death and trauma, that going to a spiritual side really kind of elevates them and levels them off. So the work that you ladies are doing is very progressive. You are on the cutting edge, and I really, really hope that nurses take advantage of this opportunity, of the service, of this coaching, and this really falls into the curriculum of nurse training, excuse me, from the onset, because if they can set this up from the beginning, I think that they would last a lot longer. They would be more well-balanced. And I think, too, that they would be supported and feel supported more. Would you say so, Lynn?
They absolutely will. The thing that's different, though, about our process is that there is no intellectual learning. It's all learned through insight. And every human being on the planet has had insight. It's what we call an aha moment.
Right.
You might have heard a joke yesterday and not realize until today what the joke was, and then we start laughing. Mm-hmm. So we have those aha moments all the time. And what we're realizing is it's those moments that actually, when we get something, when we understand something completely like that, that changes our world. We can be talking to somebody who's diabetic about taking their medications, giving their insulin, eating the right diet, and they never hear us until they have an aha moment themselves about why they might want to do something like that. We had a young man who came into the emergency room who was just 25 years old and so morbidly obese, he could not even walk by himself. But when he was there, he said, I want to talk to the doctor to find out what's possible. I want to make some changes. And the nurse said, well, the doctor's over there and can't come right now, but let's talk. And as the conversation rolled around, she said, you know, calories are energy and you are all fueled up to go in any direction you want.
That's wonderful.
And yeah, he just heard it completely. All the limits were off. And so what we're doing now through nurse coaching is working through our own insight to see what the patient isn't seeing for themselves and possibly help point that out to them, but guide them to having their own insights. And she didn't learn that as a cookbook recipe for do this, step one, step two. It came to her.
Teresa, I want to bring up a very interesting topic that you were telling me. Bullying among nurses. Who does that? How does that surface? How does that, I don't even understand how that fits in.
I think it's more the, you know, like when the stress of the circumstance gets to people, people start acting in ways that are not normal, you know? It looks like another nurse may be causing me a problem, but there's, if you confront them, then people get upset with that and say that you're bullying them. Or there's a lot of what people call backbiting, like talking about someone behind their back.
Right.
The grapevine is a great example of being, saying something about someone and then it goes through the grapevine and then people are whispering and, you know.
And the story's changed a million times. It could have been very innocent and then turns into this big kerfuffle.
Exactly. You know. There's that. And then there's little things like when I was new into my nursing career, we had a nurse who was brand new to the unit and couldn't figure out the IV tubing. And she was getting more and more frustrated. And the nurses were walking by telling her, you need to hurry up. She's going to surgery, but they weren't helping her. So I put down what I was doing and I went in and she says, I'm not stupid. I know how to do this. And I was like, I know you do. But I said, just take a break. I'm going to do this for you. And so, you know, that's a, in my view, a part of bullying when you don't offer help to someone who you see is struggling.
And, you know, that is in every profession, every walk of life, yes. You know, and it's just so disrespectful. I don't like gossip.
No.
And it's an exchange of information. I get it. Because we're all going to talk, you know, oh my God, you know, I saw Teresa's haircut. I really didn't like it. Okay, well, then it wasn't for you. But for Teresa to go and do that to, and tell Lynn and then Lynn tell April and the story has changed so many things and so many times, it becomes so disrespectful. It's so shallow. And it's a reflection of really who you are as a person when you get involved in that. You're healthcare professionals. And yes, I'm putting you on a different pedestal. You know, we're all going to sit around the coffee machine and talk. But that conversation should be positive. It should be supportive. It should be encouraging. It should be motivating. It should be filled with love. It really should be filled with love because you are the givers of life. You're responsible for that. If it's somebody that comes in with a splinter in their finger, or their leg is about to be amputated. They're depending on the nurse. And the last thing that we want is for you guys to be, you know, fighting against one another because, and I'll say it, you guys don't have to say it, doctors have egos. real big egos. I mean, they just feel that they're untouchable. I don't make a mistake. I've got, you know, photographic memory, and I've went to, you know, Harvard or Yale or whatever. You're still a human being.
Yeah.
And so you don't need that among your colleagues. You need to love one another. You need to pour into one another. I'm seeing so many pictures now of nurses that are hugging one another and supporting one another. Don't let COVID be the reason for that. Let your heart be the reason for that. The work that you do, the support that you do. You all have children. You all have families. You all have, you know, responsibilities outside of that ER or outside of that patient's room. Let that blossom like these beautiful roses. Let it shine. Okay. You have to depend on one another. We're not on this journey by ourselves. We're really depending on you. Love your sisters and your brothers. I can't say that. And that's in any profession, but really with nursing and medical professionals, when I look at you, that's what I see. I don't see the little, you know, the white coat. I don't see your name badge. I see your heart. I see what you're giving me. And that's love and that's care. Don't just show me that in the room. Show me that in every aspect of your life. I'm sorry, I got to get off the soapbox. But, you know, it was really, really disappointing to see how prevalent that is in the workforce right now. So Lynn, share with us, you know, some tools and some great takeaways for nurses in this profession and people that are struggling, and how to get in contact with you so they have to struggle no more.
Well, that's real simple. We just have a two-word website, which is nursecoaching.com. I'll start there. But the thing is for us to know that that internal resilience is always there. That inner wisdom that we've always had is always shining through. It's just been covered up. But it is never about the circumstances. It's never about the other person. It's never about what we think. It's always a peace and an inner knowing that is natural and is given to every one of us. If we look at another human being and see health, it will be there because it has always been there, but we just haven't seen it until now.
Well, I want to look through life with rose-colored glasses. I want to be the optimist. You know, I want to be optimistic. I want to give you guys as much support as I can. Teresa, can you give us some, you know, some of your closing thoughts and some things that, you know, we can share with our nursing community right now to show them the love that they need?
You know, it all comes back to like you said, love, loving each other, loving ourselves, and loving our patients. You know, I think nurses are wonderful at loving their patients. And I think we are actually turning a corner of looking at each other as colleagues, friends, and loving each other. Because if we don't support each other, you know, no one really understands nurses like nurses do. And if we can help each other, we can make a difference.
And if we don't have nurses' brains, okay?
Yeah.
That's it. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of dedication, a lot of responsibility, a lot of accountability, a lot of resources, and a lot of sacrifice. Okay. But know, nurses, that this is not a thankless job. Okay. And it's not about money. There's not enough money I can give you. It's not about that. There's something innately in your psyche, in your DNA, that called you to this profession, that has you dedicated to this profession, to serving others, not yourself. You said, I'm going to sacrifice all of this to serve someone else that is sick and that is ailing, and I want to work to make them better. But don't sacrifice so much with them that you forget about what you owe to yourself.
It's true.
Here on the edge, you ladies are incredible. I just got goosebumps. Again, I'm gonna go to the doctor's office and pick up mama's medicine and love on the nurse, even the pharmacist. because there is a lot to it. It is a lot to it. And I look so forward to sharing this in the community. I'm going to give it tons of replay all over the world. This is not just in America. Every single nurse all over the world is feeling some sort of anxiety, some sort of stress, and feeling like there's nowhere to turn. I'm going to be talking to another one of my guests that talks about the amount of suicide that, you know, people are experiencing now in the medical profession because they don't feel that there is a way out. But again, there is a way out. And if there's not a way out, there's a way to at least level off. Okay. Thank you, ladies.
There is a way out, and it's identifying our own resilience. We'll see you at nursecoaching.com.
That's right. Thank you so much, Teresa and Lynn. You guys are the best on the planet.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
All right.
Thanks so much.